What is your value? In other words, what is the most important thing in your life? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. What is the value that runs your life? What sort of things do you have that are important to you? You got to stop and think who you are. Now, Anita was telling us a story about God and his dog and how he was creating the world. And no place did God ever say in the story that Anita was telling us about that he was superior to his creation. In no place did he say that his creation depended upon him. In no place did he say that his creation was the joy of his heart. No place did he say that he needed the creation or that the creation needed him. In every place in the story, as she told it, God and its dog were going about sort of creating life, creating existence, creating the trees, the plants, the flowers, the birds, the bees, the fish, and the animals, and man, the world. And everywhere that this God and his dog went, from the story of an ancient Indian tribe, everywhere that this God and his dog went, they just looked around and they saw things and they said, oh, great, yeah, beautiful, nice, lovely, great. And then, as the finale, which I thought was very significant, God and his dog, and by the way, God was naked, absolutely naked, and he and his naked dog walked into the world he created, merged with the world he created, was one with the world he created, and then became absolutely invisible because he was at oneness with the world he created. Now, would you say that was a pretty good illustration of what it is that God does and how God works and how God thinks and how God acts? He has nothing, no clothes, no objectivity of any kind. He just was his beautiful self walking upon the earth and enjoying everything. And he wasn't dressing for anybody, not even himself. He was comfortable. He was not cold or warm or anything. He was just being himself and living in his universe. Now, what is the primary thing that God did? Everywhere he looked, he saw the beauty that was in him. Everywhere he looked, he saw all of the world as a very wonderful place to be. He looked at the world and he saw everything harmonious. He saw everything one with the other. In fact, he didn't think of it as being harmonious because he didn't think of it as being separate. It was the one big idea that he was creating, one big joy. Just like Rex back here. He's laying on his back and he's rolling back and forth and grunting away saying, oh, it feels so nice on my back, you know. He's just in paradise. Well, that's what God's dog does. Yeah. He just rolls on his back and says, yes, 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 I love it. Now, in watching the dog whisperer, when the dog whisperer would ever have a recalcitrant dog, a dog that was mean and perhaps hateful and doing its instinctual thing, whatever they might want to call that, the first thing the dog whisperer wanted to do was to get the dog to feel comfortable, let him smell him, get the dog to feel comfortable with him, that he had nothing that he was trying to do to hurt the dog. And then he took the dog and did what with him? He laid him on his side. He did this with virtually every dog that I saw, and I saw a few of them. Every dog he would lay on its side as soon as he could. And the minute he laid the dog on his side, the dog was no longer having the world as a challenge, but now the world was a tickle joy, you know, because whoever laid him on his side now was tickling him and caressing him and loving him, and the dog says, oh, I like that idea. And this is how God, in the story that Anita told, was creating the world. He was just creating the world as a beautiful, wonderful place to be, filled with marvelous things, and being itself and having fun. Now, he created the apple trees to grow from apple seeds and be beautiful. And he created the bugs to fly around and help to pollinate the different trees and plants and things it did. The bugs never ate holes into the apples while they were on the tree or on the ground. Only when the apple started to decay did the worms move in, which was a normal thing. Everything was done in perfect harmony. Everything was done in a perfect relationship so that there was nothing to fight. There were no animals to fight, no bugs to fight, no things to fight, no weather to fight. Because he looked at the clouds and said, I think I'll have a shower. And so it rained, you know, with nice warm water. Yeah, I think that I'll float down the river. So he had rain coming and making the river run. And he laid on a stick or a log or something, or maybe on his dog, and floated down the river. God did these things? Yes. God was the fulfillment of every joyful act on the face of the earth. God is the fulfillment of every joyful act on the face of the earth. Now, did a time come in the existence of the world where they had to have rules and laws and values and integrity and things? No. No. In the ideal world, its original purity and integrity, there were no rules. There were no laws. There was no values. There was no right and wrong. People just did. And everything was right and joyful and fun. People just enjoyed themselves and everything was fantastic and harmonious. No one told anyone else what to do because everyone was having too much fun doing what they were doing. Could you imagine Rex laying on the floor here, rubbing his back on the rug and just having a great old time, thinking, why doesn't little Love come over here and join me? Why isn't this here? He doesn't care. He's having a ball. And when he's done, he just lays there and says, I think I'll take a nap, you know. I mean, right in the middle of the living room, right in the middle of the walkway between the dining room and the kitchen. And people have to step over him, you know. He doesn't care. He's not concerned in the slightest. Now, we teach him to sleep off the edge of the walkway, but he somehow wiggles out into the walkway. Why? He likes the attention. He doesn't do it to be mean or to be hateful or to be obstreperous in any way. He does it because he just is being himself and having fun. Now, when little children are left to be themselves and have fun, they never get in mischief. When little children are trained by their parents about the rules of taking care of their toys and not letting other children go home with their toys and things like that, there's all these little rules that come up and possession. And when possession comes up, then what happens, values come up. What is a value? Never steal. Never take what is not yours. You know, never damage something that doesn't belong to you. It's always, you know, something that doesn't belong to you. If you're going to damage your own stuff, you're perfectly free to do so, but not somebody else's. Well, children, what do they think? Children think that everything belongs to them and everything belongs to everybody else. It's all of ours to use and play with as we wish. It doesn't matter that you brought the toy here. It's just a matter that the toy now is part of the toy bin, and everybody can play with it, whoever wants to. There's no possession. Children don't know possession. They're taught it. Children don't know anger. They're taught that. Children don't know how to be mean and hateful. They're taught that. Children don't know to have a feeling that you're different from me. You know, you have six toes on your foot, and I only have five. You're different, you know. Mom, I'm better because I got six toes. Mama, why can't I have six toes too, you know? And it's not a matter of wrong or right or good or bad, but if somebody makes you say, well, six toes are better than five, well, why can't I have six, you know? And it's not a matter of the other person being silly for having six or having five or so forth. It's just the game of life. Now, today, for the rest of the day at least, this evening, practice having no possessions. Practice having no attitudes about anything. You don't have to turn off the lights. You don't have to turn on the lights. You don't have to clean up the kitchen. You don't have to not clean up the kitchen. You don't have to do anything. But you do it because it's a delight and it's fun. Now, Anita went out and just worked her fanny off, driving the tractor around, smoothing out the roads. And Anita worked, and she worked, and she worked. And she was having the time of her life, just laughing and singing and giggling and thinking to herself, now I wonder if I can move that little bit of dirt over here and this little bit of dirt over here, it will do just what I want it to do. Now, nope, I've got to start over again. I didn't get the right depth there now. So now she starts over again. And she does it again and again and again. Now, I'm sure when I go out there, I'll have some suggestions of how I'd like it. But she did it how she liked it. And perhaps how she likes it is the best way. We will see. But the thing is, she had fun doing what she was doing. You know? And Ingeborg, what a silly person. Here she is. She has a lot of work to do. It keeps her busy, 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 busy. And what does she do? She takes my articles and retypes them so that they can be reset and be put into disk and into other things properly because they aged. And they needed to be upgraded. But for her, that wasn't work. For her, that was a delight. That was a thrill. And Ellen, she decided that she'd finished all the courses of the University of Healing, and so she started to take the courses over again. And she had everybody else do it, too, who wanted to, right? Mm-hmm. Took the art and science over again. And in reading the book, she said, my goodness, there's things in there I didn't see before. Now, if she were doing it because she had to, what would happen? It'd be boring. And she'd really fall asleep. But if she's reading that book becomes a novel to her, and she cannot put it down. She just got to read on and on and on. In the doctoral course, we have one chapter on sex. And I guarantee you, 99% of the people who read the book, who take the course, they read that chapter first. And when they read that chapter, they find out, oh, is that what it's all about? Is that what it's all about?
I know that.
And it's very, very lovely. But you see, can you be God and his dog? Or God and her dog? And can you be walking onto your planet, and your planet is just as naked as you are? I mean, you can't say God is naked because there's nothing to compare God to. There's no other people around. There's no other anything. And that's just it. So there's God. And he's out there, or she's out there, depending upon what God you're playing with right now. And so Anita, you may have noticed, is a woman. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Anita is a woman. So Anita read the story, and whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. And she said, and God created woman and man. Now that's just a little different from what other people say. God created man and woman. Okay, so why did God create woman first?
Because she is God, and she created herself.
God created woman first because woman is the creator of the procreation. Woman is the fertile vehicle out of which the progeny come. Man is merely a seed planter in that fertile vehicle. And if you don't have a woman, the seeds have no place to grow. They don't grow out of the ground. They need to have this wonderful center of procreation. So, is Anita correct? Well, it depends on whether you're a man or a woman. But is she correct? Well, for her, yes. Now, what Anita neglected to mention was that in the creation story that she read about, God created man and woman, or woman and man, the same instant.
True.
You see, true, she says, you know. But she didn't mention that before. But you see, God created both at the same instant. And it's not a matter that God had to think what they're going to be like. God created them just like himself. Just like himself. And just as men can be hermaphroditic, and can bear children, so women can be the other way around and not. And it doesn't really matter. Because what is the first man and the first woman? They are a symbol. They're a symbol. And what is God?
A symbol.
God is a symbol. And each time God entered into doing his joyful acts, he was a symbol merging with his reality. Now, did he merge with his reality? Was he one with his reality? Or was he and his reality in an inseparable bond that, like an artist, he'll take his paintbrush and canvas and he'll paint something from out of the genius within him. And then, after he puts that aside, he'll paint something else, and paint something else, and paint something else, never-ending painting all of the possibilities he has within him. And the possibilities that he looks out upon in his world. Well, this is how God is. This is how the divine is. This is how you and I are. This is how we really are born to be. We are born to be forever and ever expanding, growing, shining forth, and being beautiful. Yeah, it's wonderful. So, when you have the chance to think about it, and you dive into your bed tonight, push your teddy bear aside and push your things aside, and just lay there on your back, put your hands under your head, and look up at the infinite sky from in your room, right through the walls, right through the ceiling, right through the roof. And when you do, you'll see one of the most glorious lights of your whole life. And as you do, that light will radiate you and set you on fire for the beginning of the last day of your life, which is eternity. Enjoy it. It's given to you freely, lovingly, and wonderfully. In a slight appreciation for the lovely letters that you wrote to Santa tonight. He's saying thank you to you.
Oh,
I love you.
Yeah,
I love you. I love you.